Is the week coming?
No, she's got that meeting.
Oh, that's right.
It's so important.
Without expression, without form, and without attributes, you are unlimited and unfathomable, beyond imagination and conception, eternal and imperishable. You are indivisible, and none can see you but with eyes divine. You always were, you always are, and you always will be. You are everywhere, you are in everything, and you are also beyond everywhere, and beyond everything. You are in the firmament, and in the depths. You are manifest, and another manifest, on all planes, and beyond all planes. You are in the three worlds, and also beyond the three worlds. You are imperceptible, and independent. You are the Creator, the Lord of Lords, the Knower of all minds and hearts. You are omnipotent and omnipresent. You are knowledge infinite, power infinite, and bliss infinite. You are the ocean of knowledge, all-knowing, infinitely knowing, the Knower of the past, the present, and the future, and you are knowledge itself. You are all merciful and eternally benevolent. You are the soul of souls, the one with infinite attributes. You are the Trinity of truth, knowledge, and bliss. You are the source of truth, the ocean of love. You are the Ancient One, the highest of the high. You are Prabhu and Parameshwar. You are the beyond God. And beyond, beyond God also. You are Parabrahma, Allah, Vilahi, Yastan, Ahura Mazda, and God the Beloved. You are in Isaiah, the only one worthy of worship.
Occurrences. I don't know if this may be sort of a letdown. Can you imagine someone who told you a glowing story about a beautiful island, paradise, a place where you could go and live like a king and have everything your heart could desire, and who didn't tell you about reefs along the way, shoals and things that you would have to be watchful of. He'd be a kind of a poor advisor. Baba talks about the bliss that we really are and toward which he's leading us to experience. But being the master that he is, he also tells us about the pitfalls along the way, not just the pitfalls, but things that are of vital importance. And I know from my own experience, we don't like to look at these things too much. We say, oh, yeah, I know. And try just to have the cake. Well, this is about the heavy stuff. Nothing personal. I didn't pick this out, you know, because I felt anybody at all particularly, but it seemed like a vital importance. Nothing personal involved. Unless Baba does something to you, that's between you and Baba.
This is what I'm death.
It's worse. What kind of water is that? Selfishness comes into existence owing to the tendency of the desires to find fulfillment in action and experience. It is born of fundamental ignorance about one's own true nature. Human consciousness is clouded by the accumulation of various types of impressions deposited by the long course of the evolution of consciousness. These impressions express themselves as desires, and the range of the operation of consciousness is strictly limited by these desires. He starts right away saying, here's where the fence is. Desires are what build the fence around consciousness. You want the wider consciousness? Got to tear the fence down. Okay. These impressions express themselves as desires, and the range of the operation of consciousness is strictly limited by these desires. The sanskaras, or impressions, form an enclosure around the possible field of consciousness. The circle of sanskaras constitutes that limited area in which alone the individual consciousness can be focused. Some of the desires have mere latency of action, but others can actually translate themselves into action. The capacity of a desire to find expression in conduct depends upon the intensity and the amount of the sanskaras connected with it. To use a geometrical metaphor, we might say that when a desire passes into action, it traverses a distance which is equal to the radius of a circle described by the boundary of the sanskaras connected with it. Can I explain that to
us? Oh, sure.
Did you read that sentence again?
Yes, we all need it. To use a geometrical metaphor, we might say that when a desire passes into action, it traverses a distance which is equal to the radius of a circle describing the boundary of the sanskaras connected with it. You know, the circle, and the radius would be from the center out to a coming right from the center. A circle describing the boundary of the sanskaras connected with it, that particular desire. When a desire gathers sufficient strength, it projects itself into action or getting fulfilled. The range of selfishness is equal to the range of desires. How about this? Owing to the hindrance of multifarious desires, it becomes impossible for the soul to find free and full expression of its true being, and life becomes self-centered and narrow. The entire life of the personal ego is continually in the grip of wanting. Continually. That is, an attempt to seek fulfillment of desires through things that change and vanish. But there can be no real fulfillment through the transient things. The satisfaction derived from the fleeting things of life is not lasting, and the wants of man remain unfulfilled. There is thus a general sense of dissatisfaction accompanied by all kinds of worries. So that's where worries come from. The chief forms in which the frustrated ego finds expression are lust, greed, and anger. Lust is very much like greed in many respects, but it differs in the manner of its fulfillment, which is directly related to the gross sphere. Lust finds its expression through the medium of the physical body and is concerned with the flesh. It is a form of entanglement with the gross fear. Greed is a state of restlessness of the heart, and it consists mainly of craving for power and possessions. Possessions and power are sought for the fulfillment of desires. Man is only partially satisfied in his attempt to have the fulfillment of his desires, and this partial satisfaction fans and increases the flame of craving instead of extinguishing it. only makes matters worse. Thus, greed always finds an endless field of conquest and leaves the man endlessly dissatisfied. The chief expressions of greed always, the chief expressions of greed are related to the emotional part of man. It is a form of entanglement with the subtle sphere. Man is only partially satisfied in his attempt to have the fulfillment of his desires. And this partial satisfaction fans and increases the flame of craving instead of extinguishing it. Thus, greed always finds an endless field of conquest and leaves the man endlessly dissatisfied. The chief expressions of greed are related to the emotional part of man. It is a form of entanglement with the subtle sphere. Anger is the fume of an irritated mind. It is caused by the thwarting of desires. It feeds the limited ego and is used for domination and aggression. It aims at removing the obstacles existing in the fulfillment of desires. The frenzy of anger nourishes egoism and conceit, and it is the greatest benefactor of the limited ego. Anger does more for the limited ego than anything else. Mind is the seat of anger, and its expressions are mostly through the activities of the mind. Anger is a form of mental entanglement. Lust, greed, and anger, respectively, have body, heart, and mind as their vehicles of expression. Man experiences disappointment through lust, greed, and anger, and the frustrated ego, in its turn, seeks further gratification through lust, greed, and anger. Consciousness is thus caught up in a vicious circle of endless disappointment. Disappointment comes into existence when either lust, greed, or anger is thwarted in its expression. It is thus a general reaction of the gross, subtle, and mental entanglement. It is a depression. Depression. Hey, there's a psychological term. Caused by the non-fulfillment of lust, greed, and anger, which together are coextensive with selfishness. It is a depression. This is very real. I mean, to me, these are so important because they're coming from one who really knows, it's not a psychologist, who thinks he knows what it's all about. But this is really from someone who really knows. And we have depressions that we're not conscious of much of the time. Many people go all through their lives never getting out of depression, never being able to lift up their spirit, you see, not knowing why. You just keep adding to it, you know. And here Baba's telling us where the causes are. So, disappointment comes into existence when either lust, greed, or anger is thwarted in its expression. It is thus a general reaction of the gross, subtle, and mental entanglement. It is a depression caused by the non-fulfillment of lust, greed, and anger, which together are coextensive with selfishness. Selfishness, which is the common basis of these three ingredients, vices, is thus the ultimate cause of disappointment and worry. Where the worries come from. It defeats itself. It seeks fulfillment through desires, but succeeds only in arriving at unending dissatisfaction. the road to happiness. Selfishness inevitably leads to dissatisfaction and disappointment because desires are endless. The problem of happiness is therefore the problem of dropping out desires. Desires, however, cannot be effectively overcome through mechanical repression. They can be annihilated only through knowledge. This repressing isn't going to do the trick. We have to know. This is why Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. This is why Baba explains all these things, so that we will know and be intelligent about what's happening within. If you dive deep in the realm of thoughts and think seriously for just a few minutes, you'll realize the emptiness of desires. Think of what you have enjoyed all these years and what you have suffered. All that you have enjoyed through life is today nil. All that you have suffered through life is also nothing in the present. All was illusory. It is your right to be happy, and yet you create your own unhappiness by wanting things. Well, we're reading what Baba has to say about selfishness, desires, and how they lead. So, Baba says, it is your right to be happy, and yet you create your own unhappiness by wanting things. Wanting is the source of perpetual restlessness. If you do not get the thing you wanted, you are disappointed. And if you get it, you want more and more of it and become unhappy. Say, I do not want anything. And be happy. Easier said than done. I do not want anything. Well, I mean, it's a start, isn't it? It's an affirmation. It is really a very tangible thing to do, to say, I do not want anything. I will stop this life-like wanting machine. So, I do not want anything and be happy. The continuous realization of the futility of wants will eventually lead you to knowledge. Continuous realization of the futility of wants will lead you to knowledge. This self-knowledge will give you the freedom from wants, which leads to the road to abiding happiness. This self-knowledge will lead you to the freedom from wants, which leads to the road to abiding happiness. This is a roadmap, you know. Mm-hmm. Wants should be carefully distinguished from needs. Pride and anger, greed and lust, are all different from need. You might think, I need all that I want. But this is a mistake. If you are thirsty in a desert, what you need is good water, not lemonade. As long as man has a body, there will be some need, and it is necessary to meet these needs. But wants are an outcome of infatuated imagination. Wants, let me read that again, are, where is it? I'll be there, I just read it. But wants are an outcome of infatuated imagination. What's infatuated imagination?
Blown up imagination.
Yeah, you magnify. You think of something, then begin to magnify its attraction, importance, and how much you need it. How much satisfaction you're going to have by getting it. And So much of it is imagination, infatuated imagination. But wants are an outcome of infatuated imagination. But they must be scrupulously killed if there is to be any happiness. As the very being of selfishness consists of desires, renunciation of wants becomes a process of death. Hey, you were right. Dying in the ordinary sense means parting with the physical body, but dying in the real sense means renunciation of low sense desires. The priests prepare men for false death by painting gloomy pictures of hell and heaven, but their death is illusory, as life is one unbroken continuity. The real death consists of the cessation of desires, and it comes by gradual stages. So this is the death Baba is talking about. The death of desire. The dawn of love facilitates the death of selfishness. The dawn of love. We have seen that dawn. It's radiant light. Being is dying by loving. Priceless. That's one of Baba's rare pearls. Because just to say the other without this is like. But being is dying by loving. It is the transmutation of the lower forces or the other forces which are just wasted away on wants or desires. But the essence of it is that this is possible. This is what always gets me. This is possible. Baba's saying, we can do it. And with his help, we will do it. We're going to do it. There's a fellow who used to follow Baba many, many years ago in New York City. He was a little bit facetious when he used to say, he didn't remember him, thought, Baba and I can do anything. I mean, Lincoln Action.
Lincoln Action. Lincoln Action?
Well, he changed. Lincoln Action. But really, I mean, it is truly so that if we depend on Baba and really dig in there the way he indicates we should and must sooner or later, it is his strength that will come in. His guidance. It is he who will really do more within us than we are able to do within ourselves. The dawn of love facilitates the death of selfishness. Being is dying by loving. If you cannot love one another, how can you love even those who torture you? The limits of selfishness are created by ignorance. When a man realizes that he can have a more glorious satisfaction by widening the sphere of his interests and activities, he is heading towards the life of service. At this stage, he entertains many good desires. He wants to make others happy by relieving distress and helping them. And though even in such good desires, there is often an indirect and latent reference to the self, narrow selfishness has no grip or a good deed. Even good desires may, in a sense, be said to be a form of enlightened and extended selfishness, for like bad desires, they too move within the domain of duality. But as man entertains good desires, his selfishness embraces a larger conception, which eventually brings about its own extinction. Instead of merely trying to be luminous, arrestive, and possessive, man learns to be useful to others. The desires which enter into a constitution of the personal ego are either good or bad. Bad desires are ordinarily referred to as forms of selfishness, and good desires are referred to as form of selflessness. But there is no hard and fast dividing line, selfishness from selflessness. Both move in the domain of duality. And from the ultimate point of view, which transcends the opposites of good and bad, the distinction between selfishness and selflessness is chiefly one of range. Selfishness and selflessness are two phases of the life of the personal ego, and these two phases are continuous with each other. Selfishness arises when all the desires are centered around the narrow individuality. Selflessness arises when this crude organization of desires suffers disintegration, and there is a general dispersing of desires, with the result that they cover a much wider sphere. Selfishness is the narrowing down of interests to a limited field. Selflessness is the extension of interests over a wide field. Excuse me. To put it paradoxically, selfishness is a restricted form of selflessness, and selflessness is the drawing out of selfishness into a wide sphere of activity. Selfishness must be transmuted into selflessness before the domain of duality is completely transcended. Persistent and continuous performance of good deeds wears out selfishness. Selfishness extended and expressed in the form of good deeds becomes the instrument of its own destruction. Isn't that interesting to think about? Selfishness extended and expressed in the form of good deeds becomes the instrument of its own destruction. Painlessly. The good is the main link between selfishness thriving and dying. Selfishness, which in the beginning is the father of evil tendencies, becomes, through good deeds, the hero of its own defeat. When the evil tendencies are completely replaced by good tendencies, selfishness is transformed into selflessness. That is, individual selfishness loses itself in universal interest. Though this selfless and good life is also bound by the opposites, goodness is a necessary step towards freedom from the opposite. Goodness is the means by which the soul annihilates its own ignorance. So Baba did not preach or guide toward a kind of conscience-less mental transcendentalism. He certainly makes it clear, irrevocably clear, that we have to go through the gate of goodness to go beyond good and evil. From the good, the soul passes on to God. Selflessness is merged into universal selfhood. Universal selfhood. That's pretty big, isn't it?
That's giant.
How big?
Giant.
I guess so. From good, the soul passes on to God. Selflessness is merged into universal selfhood, which is beyond good and bad, virtue and vice, and all the other dual aspects of Maya. The height of selflessness is the beginning of the feeling of oneness with all. So that's how we get that feeling of oneness for all. There you go. The height of selflessness is the beginning, that's just the beginning, of the feeling of oneness, the feeling, it's a feeling, it isn't so much a knowing as a feeling of oneness with all. In the state of liberation, there is neither selfishness nor selflessness in the ordinary sense. But both of these are taken up and merged in the feeling of selfness for all. Feeling becomes all important. The feeling. I am. You don't feel from up here, down here, from there. The feeling of selfness for all. This is what Baba's been talking about. It's possible for us to feel selfless for all. We could practice that. We could begin working on it right now. We don't have to wait until next lifetime. In a state of liberation, realization of the unity of all is accompanied by peace and unfathomable bliss. Gee, look at this stuff I was reading.
Wow.
Look at the real stuff. Realization of the unity of all. When you realize it, you feel it. This is accompanied by peace and unfathomable bliss. It does not in any way lead either to spiritual stagnation or to the obliteration of relative values. Selfness for all brings about undisturbed harmony without loss of discrimination, and unshakable peace, without indifference to the surroundings. This selfness for all is not an outcome of merely subjective synthesis. It is a result of an actual attainment of union with the ultimate reality, which includes all. Open your heart by weeding out all desire and by harboring only one longing. He's telling us how you can open our heart by weeding out all. He doesn't say 50%, 30%. All. He doesn't give us much choice there. Open your heart by weeding out all desires and by harboring, keeping only one longing, the longing for union with the ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is not to be sought in the changing things of external environment, but in one's own being. Every time your soul intends to enter your human heart, it finds the doors locked and the inside too full of desire. Do not keep the doors of your hearts locked or closed. Everywhere there is the source of abiding bliss, and yet all are miserable because of desires, the born of ignorance. The goal of lasting happiness shines forth fully only when the limited ego, with all its desires, finds its complete and final extinction. This is so deep in its significance that I'm sure that none of us were able to grasp its depth, its importance of it when we first read this, and probably after the 100th time, we still haven't grasped it. And I know for me, after all of these years of reading this and all these discourses, it begins to emerge in its real importance, the true importance of really seriously stopping the desire nature. We laugh sometimes, or maybe we're sympathetic if we are so inclined, when we hear of someone who has a bad habit and is struggling to break it, just about climbing the walls in the process. Maybe some of you have gone through that. Even good habits. But breaking. And we say, well, I'm glad I'm not, I don't find addicted to that stuff. I don't have to go through that. We laugh too soon. We are addicted to something equally as binding and something through which we will have to break and go through that period of breaking off, of having the desires and yet not fulfilling them, until we learn to bring those forces forth as love. Love of Baba, love of humanity, love. Longing, if we cannot have love, it would be longing. But to know that we're capable of getting free of desire, and that the forces within us can and will be directed toward true longing, toward love. To know this, we know we're not on a wild goose chase, that we're on the right track, that if we fail 1,000 times or 10,000 times, we're still going to stay in there, hang in there, and keep trying. The rhythm of ordinary influences, lust, greed, anger, egoism, will gradually, hopefully suddenly and quickly, give way to the rhythm of Bhagavad Gita and sustain quiescence.
How long does it take?
Well, it's probably taking another 15 minutes. Then I have to do that one again. So I'll take it. I'm going to cook dinner. Why do I have to do it?
Yeah.
Well, see, I recorded this guy giving a talk, and this other guy that wasn't there wanted a copy of the tape so he could listen to it. So we're making a copy onto his tape recorder.
Is this your tape recorder?
Well, it's a friend of mine's.
Do you have a tape recorder?
No, I borrowed this one from him so I could take it to India.
You're gonna go to India? What's this?
Well, don't pull it. See, this is sort of like the microphone. Don't put it in there. See, this is so you could do... I could actually have another one here and make another tape.
I'm going to have another tape.
Yeah. We're making copies of this tape. Of Darwin Shaw gave a lecture, and this guy wanted a copy, so we copied it onto his.
What's that?
Don't touch it. What, this little thing?
Yeah.
That's a microphone. But... But when this is plugged in, it sort of like acts like the microphone instead of this. See this? See this? We can't hear it, but actually they're talking, and that shows you that it's, you know, like he's talking loud, and sometimes not so loud.
Don't you
go and
borrowings in the United States.
But you should put this one up.
Well, yeah, well, we did. I know. Well, we tried that, but what happened is this tape recorder isn't very good and it didn't sound good. So I'm going to do it both on this one.
Are you going to...
I don't have a car.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I was hoping maybe I could catch a ride with Donna and Jean on the third day.
Have you had a car trip?
Well, yeah, I was going to go over there and make this copy of this tape for me. You want to go in there now?
Is there a cabin? Cove? Yeah, I'll be there.
And tell him, when I see her, I said, if I have a ride, chip, and I'll bring this tape over and put this in. And if they're out there making it, check the people involved in care and why.
It's over there.
They're over there.
Yeah, right.
It's an orange ball. Yeah, you can come back and tell me.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. Most of them are just, you know, the things.
Ah! 4 is a your plane.
Thank you.